Good morning once again, and thank you to the worship committee for inviting me back. Last year, my topic was, if there is a God, and when I received this year's invitation, I planned a follow-up sermon exploring prophets and prophecy. But, as my Australian grandchildren will say, that went into the bin. When Alice and I arrived on Cape Cod in early June and returned to the sanctuary for Fred Bushner's remembrance service, I sat in the pew and I felt inspired to write a completely different sermon for today. I thought about this church's ongoing efforts to build true community here on Cape Cod, and I thought, whatever it is that defines true community, Fred personified it. I think this it that Fred personified can be termed soul. So that was the starting word that I developed my thoughts around, and I found this hymn, which may be a little unfamiliar to many people, Once to Every Soul and Nation, and it reminded me of when I was working here on Cape Cod, and I came across this hymn, and I saw the word soul, and the word scaffold, and the word throne, and I wrote a poem. And the poem went like this: Once to every soul and nation, so the old hymn goes, every day a new temptation to sell my sacred soul. For this I rise and drink sweet tea with men who hold the reins, while underneath their wagon wheels the children writhe in pain. For this I climb those ivory towers built by men who never lose, two rooms up there, two kinds of power, and every day I get to choose. The valet takes my key and winks, the woman at the desk all smiles, founder's circle, she must think, and points me down that wide, wide aisle. But no, I'm looking for the room for those with AIDS who've been abused. And when she hears this piece of news, her eyes belie that she's confused. That's down that other hall, she points, all business when she hears me ask, twitching for her latex gloves, wondering where she left her mask. Each day I, as man and nation, visit unexpected rooms, help prepare the celebrations when the scaffolds topple thrones. When I was here on Cape Cod, of course, I worked with all kinds of challenges. And that's why when I thought about Fred and I thought about soul, I rewrote this morning's sermon. Now, philosophers, mystics, theologians, and shamans have lectured and written lots about soul for millennia, so what could I add? Maybe I thought I could bring soul down to earth. This inspiration was strengthened the following Sunday when we recited our unison affirmation, concluding with these words: to the end that all souls shall grow into harmony with the divine. Thus do we covenant together. So for the sake of this sermon, I define soul as the capacity to give and receive love. I came up with this definition by substituting the words capacity to give and receive love whenever I read the word soul. Here's an image for this definition. Consider balloons. How balloons have different capacities. For example, party balloons, hot air balloons, weather balloons, our lungs. Love inspires our souls like a deep breath inspires our bodies. Love makes all souls grow. Thus, for the sake of this sermon, our capacity to give and receive love is what grows into harmony with the divine. Fred's life reminded me that our love-inspired actions hold meaning only to the extent that they move us to the end our affirmation proclaims. I believe that now, More than ever, the health of our community, our nation, and our world depend on how all souls, including our individual souls and our nation's souls, take action every day to grow into harmony with the divine. Well, I decided to choose our nation's soul in my musings after reading the sentence from columnist Maureen Dowd in last week's Cape Cod Times about the treatment of little children in immigration detention centers. Dowd wrote, and I quote, "On the occasion of America's 242nd birthday, we must ask who we are. If we can see accounts of infants snatched from their parents and returned covered in lice, and not worry about our nation's soul." So Dowd's quotation establishes one bookend to my sermon. For the next few minutes, I'd like to share some reflections from my soul's journey, past, present, and future. Past. I spent my formative teen years immersed in a predominantly white, liberal, Protestant boarding school here in New England, followed by a similar college experience. During these studies, I somehow came to believe that soul characterized the other. Whatever soul was, I didn't have it. Soul referred to two cultures that I imagined were quite different from mine. African-American culture, soul food, soul music, soul train, and the so-called New Age culture, loosely tied to Eastern mysticism that spoke of ideas like soulmate or soul sick. Even as a young adult, I thought about soul at all. I figured it didn't really apply to me. It was not something to worry about until I died, and that wasn't going to happen anytime soon. But 2007 came along, and death looked me bang in the eye, and I was forced to reevaluate my beliefs about soul. My body has healed from that experience, but my soul continues to be in recovery from the white, Protestant New England culture of my teen and adult years. So in the last decade, I've waded back into the cultures that nurtured me in my early childhood in the Sonoran Desert, cultures that were predominantly Hispanic, Native American, and Black. I realized that I had projected my concept of soul onto the other. The fact was, down deep, I was afraid of soul. For the last 500 years, my WASP culture first perpetrated and then conveniently denied the oppression of slaves, the genocide of Native Americans, and the exploitation of low-income labor. Our country's material wealth came at the expense of its soul. Once I understood this, I looked back at the roots of Western civilization. The founders of the United States were motivated by the ideals of ancient Greece and the Roman Empire and energized by the Enlightenment, the Age of Reason. They minimized the fact that ancient Greece and Rome were sustained by slaves, that Enlightenment thinking often excluded the poor. Now, much that is good has come from the Enlightenment, but in the process, scientific, economic, and political thoughts compartmentalized soul, gave it over to clergy and philosophers to ponder rather than incorporating it into the day-to-day struggle to envision and build a better world. For the Enlightenment folk to be real, things needed to be quantified. If you couldn't measure soul, by definition, it didn't exist. This dualism robbed the potential power of soul to support scientific, political, and economic life, the cornerstones of dignity, justice, truth, and compassion that both our UU affirmation of faith and democratic republics should embody. Freedom of thought comes with responsibility of soul. When people, nations, and civilizations get out of balance, souls suffer. Enlightenment needs some darkness to be whole. In Latin America, this need is described by the idiom sol y sombra, sun, and shade. This brings me to the present. I celebrate both sun and shade, sol y sombra, as a substitute teacher at the Tucson Waldorf School, with intention supporting and guiding the souls of first through eighth graders as they grow into harmony with the divine. I get called in to teach whatever needs teaching on any given day. Children's souls, and mine too, grow into harmony with the divine through English and Spanish and art and math, music, woodworking, phys ed, which is called movement in Waldorf schools, even Arabic. These children teach me a whole lot more than I teach them. The holistic curriculum of Waldorf schools grew out of the lectures and books of Rudolf Steiner, who in 1919 founded the first of what are now more than 1,000 Waldorf schools worldwide. Steiner was a child of the Enlightenment, a scientist, but he had these experiences of soul that he couldn't quite reconcile, and so he studied and he lectured and he thought and he meditated and he came up with this curriculum that now leads to these schools. He chose the terms imagination, intuition, and inspiration to describe the process. His impact on our present world is just beginning to be felt. Willy Brandt, former Chancellor of Germany and recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize, credited Steiner as having made the greatest contribution to peace of anyone in the 20th century. Now, Steiner didn't proselytize or evangelize. In one of his last books, Harmony of the Creative Word, he wrote, "This brings us to something about which I can only speak on a soul level. For anthroposophy should never campaign for anything, should never advocate for one thing or another, but should only present the truth. The conclusions people draw for their own lives are their own personal affair. Anthroposophy does not lay down rules, but puts forward truths." End quote. This brings me to my third topic, the future of our souls. I believe that in order for all souls to grow into harmony with the divine, we must do four specific things. Listen to our souls, feed our souls, provide our souls room to grow, and provide our souls with meaningful work. Well, I listen to my soul through my vivid dreams, but dreams are just one of many possible listening posts. Meditation, prayer, deep conversations with beloved friends, laughter, music, knitting, yoga, rugby, gardening, woodworking, and many other options are all pathways for imagination, intuition, and inspiration. The key is to share these listening posts with others so that all our capacity to love and be loved grows. Feed one another's souls constantly with art, including literature and poetry. Art abounds in our world. Here's one little morsel from the Abundant Feast for the Soul, a poem entitled "Is My Soul Asleep?" by the Latin poet Antonio Machado, translated by Robert Bly. "Is my soul asleep? Have those beehives that work in the night stopped? And the water wheel of thought, is it going around now? Cups empty, carrying only shadows? No, my soul is not asleep. It is awake, wide awake. It neither sleeps nor dreams, but watches. Its eyes wide open, far off things, and listens at the shores of the great silence." Third, souls have roots, and these roots need room to grow. If your soul feels cramped, repot it. Remember that your soul's roots extend way beyond time, space, and matter, into a universe where abundance, not scarcity, rules. Cultivate an attitude of abundance, and as author and TED speaker Brené Brown exhorts, dare greatly. Allow yourself to be vulnerable. Ask your soul to show you the abundance it experiences, which can overcome all fear of scarcity. Brown quotes the author Lynn Twist, who in her book The Soul of Money refers to scarcity as the great lie. Brown writes, and I quote, worrying about scarcity is our culture's version of post-traumatic stress. It happens when we've been through too much, and rather than coming together to heal, which requires vulnerability, we're angry and scared and at each other's throats. It's not just the larger culture that's suffering. I found the same dynamics playing out in family culture, work culture, school culture, and community culture. End quote. Scarcity is the great lie. This is what we are called to resist with every fiber of our soul. The current political climate in our community, nation, and world is both cause and effect of this post-traumatic stress that Brown identifies. At levels both national and local, tyrants preach fear and scarcity when, in fact, our community, our nation, and world offer tremendous abundance. Our souls fully embrace the astonishing abundance they witness in the stars in the night sky, the leaves on an oak tree, the grains of sand on the beach, the clams buried in the tidal flats. It is through our souls that we experience the delight of abundance that characterizes our universe. So, put our souls to work. Let's apply this abundance every day. Remember the Christopher Fry poem that we read? Thank God our time is now, when wrong comes up to face us everywhere, never to leave us till we take the longest stride of soul we ever took. Imagine that, thanking God our time is now, when wrong comes up to face us everywhere. When we listen to our souls, they tell us the work they yearn for us to do. What does your soul call you to do? The older I get, the more I listen to my soul, and the more surprising its requests become. In 2 weeks, I'll begin teaching Spanish to first and second graders in our local public elementary school. Can I do this? Who knows? My soul knows, but it's not telling. It simply says, listen. I'm turning 70 next year, and this will be a new adventure. I'm scared that I won't do this terribly well, but my soul tells me that it needs to be done anyway for the sake of these children's futures after my body turns to dust. What work does your soul call you to do today, tomorrow, and for the rest of your life? And beyond our physical lives, our souls are not bound by time and space. For my soul, my body's death will be like taking off tight shoes. But my soul wants to wear out those shoes before tossing them away. Our UU affirmation reminds us to put our souls to work, striving for love, truth, and justice. And by so doing, they will grow into harmony with the divine. They will open space for other souls to grow, for the community, nation, and world souls to all grow into harmony with the divine. With our nation's soul in mind, my closing bookend quotation is from Alexander Solzhenitsyn's Nobel Prize lecture. And I quote, literature is a common body and a common soul, a living unity of heart in which one may see reflected the growing unity of the human race. If we are worth anything at all, let us try to help. In our own countries, torn apart by different parties, movements, castes, and groups, who was there from the beginning who was not a divisive force, but a uniting one? Surely that is essentially the writer's position, to give expression to the national language, which is the nation's binding force, to give expression to the very soil on which his people live, and in a few happy instances, to give expression to the nation's soul. every form of art, everything that cultivates our collective imagination, intuition, and inspiration can rescue us from the poisons of scarcity, fear, and cynicism tyrants try to shove down our throats. Fred Buechner and all the souls who have grown in and through this church rely on our souls' abundant efforts to continue the work they began. As we covenant together, we will continue their work until all souls have grown into harmony with the divine. Now, our closing hymn, number 121, We'll Build a Land.